friends, we have a really special treat for you today. Kara Tyrell is here. She's a Vermont-based early childhood educator and a collaborative parenting coach and the founder of Core 4 Parenting. But before we dive into today's interview and unpack the really empowering strategies she has for us parents, I want to highlight the incredible resources waiting for you in the Clear Skin Kids course. As the primary health advocate for your kid, it's essential to arm yourself with actionable strategies. Your child is in need right now, and you require a tangible plan to address their skin condition. Through the implementation of an eczema-fighting diet, practical at-home remedies, and savvy parenting techniques for health, achieving clear skin for your child is well within your grasp. So if you're ready to change the trajectory of your child's and your family's health, you can get started at eczemakids.com. Go to the Work With Me tab if that feels like a fit for you. Eczemakids.com. Work with me. I'll see you there. Okay, so Kara Tyrell is the passionate mastermind behind the Collaborative Parenting Methodology, a birth to five soul and science-based framework that empowers toddler parents to turn tantrums into teachable moments. While teaching preschool and kindergarten, she noticed that her students knew their ABCs and their 1-2-3s, but they really struggled with the social and emotional and interpersonal skills. At drop-off, parents would say, "Oh, we're so glad that you're their first teacher," but she knew that she wasn't, their parents were. And this realization led her to a professional pivot as an online early child educator and coach. So Kara has now embraced her role as a thought leader and fierce advocate for pandemic parents raising the COVID generation, Gen Z. Kara has a top-ranked podcast, Transforming the Toddler Years, and she's teaching the five executive functioning skills your kids need to navigate our ever-changing world. Let's dig into it. Well, hi, Kara. Thanks so much for being here.
It is a joy to be here. I can't wait to have this conversation with you.
Me too. And I'm so thrilled to have you on because my little guy just turned 2 a couple weeks ago, and I know toddlerhood is your specialty. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you today. Can you introduce yourself and your work to my audience?
Absolutely. So, hey, I'm Kara Tyrell, the founder of Core 4 Parenting, and I've created what I call a collaborative parenting methodology. So we're taking conscious parenting to the next level and helping moms like you turn those toddler tantrums into truly teachable moments.
Oh, so necessary, because I feel like this is our fourth go around with my little guy. He's number 4. And goodness, you know, those tantrums, they rattle you, like no matter what, no matter how many times you've heard them and seen them before, it still really gets to you, I guess, just right off the gate. Do you have any tips for us as parents as to how to navigate those times? Like one for me especially, and I bet this is quite common amongst my listeners as well, because we have a lot of extra things to do surrounding like symptom management and skincare. But I find even just getting my little guy to the changing table and changing his diaper is a bit of a struggle these days. And I was just wondering, even just like regular things that we do all the time, all throughout the day, have they still just, you know, trigger a little bit of a tantrum? Do you have any advice as to what to do as far as we're concerned, the parents, and then also how to help our little ones through those type of things?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing to realize is that every single moment like that in a toddler's life is a transition. For you, it's a goal that you need to accomplish. Diaper must get changed. For them, they have to stop doing something to move somewhere they don't necessarily want to go, to then have this thing done to, it's a transition. And one of the things about self-evolution in toddlerhood is that it comes with a million of them a day. And that's why we have so many meltdowns, because the transitions are maybe not something they expected, or they did, and last time it didn't go so well. And now they're like, oh no, not this again. And so we can absolutely get in front of them. In fact, I have a guide. It's my 4 tips for tantrum-free transitions, and it's totally free. And so grab it and use my strategies and ask your listeners, like, use it. Make sure that if you can have calmer moments that are avoidable, you absolutely can.
What would the first step be for tantrum-free transitions?
So the first thing to realize is that you and your toddler are coming from two different mindsets. In fact, your mindset is all up here. You're just thinking it through and making the plan and getting to the end result already, whereas they are all feeling, they're all emotion. So step one is for you to be self-aware enough to step back and observe your child's state of being. Step two is to make sure that you are using intentional language that sets your child up for success. When you're self-aware like that, you have the ability to guide your child to be part of the decision-making process with you. And once you do that, even if it's one small decision made in the grand scheme of how this diaper gets changed, they feel empowered, they feel engaged, and they have just a tiny bit of buy-in. So that's just a couple of the steps that allow you to really get down into the relationship with your child of, I know this is not your favorite thing, but I'm here to help do it with you, not to you, and not for you.
Sure. So we start with like self-awareness in ourselves, regulate our own nervous systems, right? So we can guide our little ones through it. Then just make sure we're being intentional about the language that we're using. So I'm sure part of that's just like maintaining that relaxed tone, I know goes a far way. And then was that, so like offering a choice, like, do you want to bring this or this with you?
Often that is really all it takes. However, I also really love the idea of embedding those boundaries, right? This is happening, and then giving the choice inside of it. And so you're going to want to start the conversation before the challenging moment arrives and give them that opportunity. We are changing your diaper. It's my job to keep you safe. And when your skin is wet or dirty, it's not safe for your body. We are changing your diaper. Like you said, would you like to have your diaper changed on the floor or on the changing table? You choose, mm-hmm. right? Would you like your sister to sit with you or to sit away from you on the couch? You choose. Give them that opportunity for some buy-in. And then if they're all, if they're just going down, right? You're trying and they're just going, you say, wait a minute. I wonder if we should do it in 1 minute or 3 minutes. So now you can delay it if they're not quite emotionally ready. And you're using a transition tool. You're using a timer. And then once the timer goes off, because they've chosen the amount of minutes, right? So again, there's that buy-in. Once that timer goes off, now you don't have to own this. The timer said, it's time to get it done. It's not mom said, mm-hmm. it's time to get it done anymore. So yeah, I go into some more detail, and I actually have audio examples of me doing it with a little girl that help, to your point, to hear the tone mm-hmm. and to hear how short my sentences are and mm-hmm. to give her time to make choices and give her time to process my request and then respond.
Yep. I'm loving this. And like I said, this is helpful for me just right here, right now in my life. So if you give him buy-in, and he just turned two, right? Mm-hmm. So he understands we use the word, you know, would you like another minute or something like that? He understands if he says minute, then, you know, he gets like more time. So if we're past that point and now it's been 3 minutes and it's like, okay, no, really, we have to get this done. And he's not feeling it. Is that when is it ever okay to just pick them up and do it? Like at the end of the day, it needs to be done and way before the end of the day, right? Like maybe we're leaving or right. maybe, you know, there's just a lot going on. We're homeschooling and three kids and mm-hmm. everyone has a lot going on. And what do we do then if they're still not feeling it at that time? You got to put on the lotion or you got to do whatever it is and they don't want to do it.
Yeah. So this is why I say I created a collaborative parenting methodology, because one strategy is not a relationship. One strategy does not get you to your end goal. And so there are so many pieces that go into what you just asked. The first is, who is your child? And that is the first question that we have to ask ourselves as parents. because you have four. So you know that each one uniquely handles situations differently. Each one approaches situate, each one has very different triggers. So knowing who he is, this little boy, right?
Mm-hmm. Ruben.
Your fourth. Yeah. Knowing who he is and what his triggers generally are is going to help you set him up for success. If the tantrum comes, right? If he spirals and he's just out of control, at that point, there is no way to reason with him. There's literally no way for that information to process in his brain in the space that it needs to be in, that frontal lobe area, that executive functioning space, because he's just now having to process the emotion. And so the answer to your question is, it depends on what it is. If it's, we need to leave the restaurant, then yeah, scoop him up and go. If it's, we've got to get sister to school, you got to scoop him up, you got to go. If you have the space and the time to allow him to process the emotion so he gets it all out of his body and returns to center, and you can have what I call a post-casting conversation afterwards, that would be the preference. Because think about it like this. When you're highly agitated, it's been a long day, you're tired, you're depleted with all the skills that you had at the beginning of the day, and all you want to do is just get it out to somebody, just purge it, vent it. And they're like, would you just calm down? That's how it feels.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here. My energy is here, and energy has to move. It can't be static in our bodies. It has to expel. So if you have the ability to let him get through it and then come back and say, wow, that was a lot of energy that just went through your body, your diaper's still wet, you will start to feel even worse if your skin gets wet and cracked. I think we probably better just get this done, don't you?
Sometimes, like, there's been people that have said, like, oh, you talk to them like adults. And it's like, I don't know how else to talk to them. They're just people at the end of the day. And I feel like any language is positive, you know, even when they're babies. But yeah, I mean, my little guy is quite verbal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you said, I'm sure the tone, even if they don't understand what you're saying, the tone plays most of it.
Right. And just to be clear, they totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I love that you talk to your kids like you want them to talk back to you. A couple of intentional language tips I always give: speaking complete sentences, regardless of how old they are, but keep them short.
Mm-hmm.
Keep, especially at the 2-year-old age, keep your sentences 6 words or less, and then string them together if you need to. Wow, you are really upset. You wish that you could have had that cookie. Cookies are for after dinner. See how I'm stringing them together?
Yeah.
But because they have a beginning and an end, a period, the brain understands that's one chunk of information it needs to process. And the smaller the sentence or shorter the sentence, the easier it processes in a toddler brain.
So helpful. I've read on your site that you talk about these 5 executive functioning skills that our kids really need to make it in this world. And I'm wondering what those are. What have you come across in your line of work that you see kids really needing and not necessarily being equipped with?
Oh, one of my favorite topics. So executive functioning skills we use them every single day. Whether we know it or not, as adults, they are foundationally something that we started using when we were kids. And they help us develop persistence and grit and the ability to try and fail and try again. And they help us connect with ourselves and connect with others and have other perspectives. Being able to see the world through your eyes, I might not agree with your perspective, but I can honor and respect it. So Of the myriad of executive functioning skills, what I've noticed, especially post-pandemic in this generation of kids who's up and coming and had limited opportunity to get out and practice these during those bunch of years, is there are five that we really need to focus on and embed them into our daily interactions with our kids. The first one is delayed gratification, the ability to wait. And as I list these, your listeners are going to go, oh, me too. Because this is not specific to an age group. This is a human experience that we have. And we live in a very instant gratification society. Mm-hmm. So teaching our kids opportunities to wait that are developmentally appropriate is going to support you and them, especially as they move out into the world. So in the home, that can sound, you know, the child can say, I want a snack. And maybe you were fully prepared to get snack ready, but use it as an opportunity. Say, oh, I hear that you would like a snack. Your snack will be ready in 5 minutes. Would you like me to set a timer so you know when it's ready? Or do you trust that I can just come and tell you? Make the opportunity happen to practice that skill.
That's helpful. That's a good way to do it. I know it, like the study is essentially the same thing. Like, I don't know what they called it, but where they had kids, you know, in a study hall room, and it was like, you can eat this donut now, or if you wait 5 minutes, you can have two donuts. I don't know what that study's called, but they said that, you know, the kids that were able to postpone, delay gratification and eat the two donuts, I mean, did so much better. And I don't know how they measured this in life, but I don't know if it was like more of a income thing or just an overall happiness. I don't know how they based it on. But anyway, like I love that. And that's a really practical way that we can implement that, stretch that muscle at home.
And the extension of that is that when you have a slightly older child or even your two-year-olds that come to you and the world is ending, right? The zipper must be zipped right now. You can ask them, if you've been practicing, is this something that we have to do right now? Or could it wait a minute? And try to get that cognitive processing happening where they are making those questions and answers in their own head. Because one of the things that we as humans do is we feel really confident that everything is important and urgent all at the same time. But sometimes things can actually wait. And if we wait, something better comes along. So that's the first one. And it's extremely important. Another one is time management, and see how they fit together. We need our kids to be able to realize when they come up against a struggle that there are actions that they're going to take, and something's going to happen first, and then the next thing, and the next thing. And when we have problem-solving thinking kids, they stop and say, what should I do first? And so we can model that for them with the time management skills of a mini plan. Okay, last night, bedtime didn't go so well. So let's think, tonight, what will we do first? Then what will we do second? And what will we do after that? And toddlers particularly love to be part of this plan making. And if you look at any of the multimedia materials that the internet puts out for you, particularly like PBS TV shows and animated books, they follow this beginning, middle, end pattern. And it's because that's the way that we start and finish something, and it's really valuable for kids.
Yeah. And I can see how this directly mirrors in just the way that we approach them about things that we want done. And if you can stay calm and suggest that maybe it's not important and urgent and it doesn't have to be done right now, if you give them some grace of some extra minutes, that maybe you'll see that more in return.
Yes. Another one is flexible thinking. And I just can't stress the importance of this enough. Where kids are very rigid thinkers in the way that they approach things. They think there's one way to get it done. And if mom's not doing it that way, she's doing it wrong. And you really can be that mirror for them and say, wow, is there another way that we could attempt this? This doesn't appear to be working. you know, that idea that if you do something over and over, expecting a different result. So flexible thinking is incredibly important. And one of the intentional language phrases that I use with kids when they get really upset because they made a picture in their head of the way it was going to go and it didn't is, wow, that was unexpected. And that opens that conversation. Wow, that was unexpected. Yesterday, your skin was perfectly clear, or probably in your case and in your family's case is not perfectly, right? But yesterday your skin looked and felt really good. And today it's flared up. Oh, that was unexpected. We need to make a plan to get something on your skin that's going to feel good before you go to bed tonight. Think you can help me set that up?
I like that. It's like this constant narration of just what's going on, and it's candid and honest, and yeah, they pick up on that. Okay.
They absolutely do.
Keep going. Yeah. Yes. Loving it.
Another one that I've added that I really feel strongly about is sense of self. I told you that observing your child for who they are matters, and that's your process. You're capable of watching them and say, oh, wow, I have a kid who really loves to move their body. They have a lot of energy. They have really good ideas. But we don't often tell them those things. And if that's who they are, that's their nature that they were born with and their identity, we need to empower them to step into their identity as young as possible. And so tell them. Like with my girls, oh my gosh, 2 years almost to the day apart, but the most polarized black and white personalities that you've ever seen. And so with one, I would have conversations that sounded like, you're so generous, you're so kind, your heart really feels strong things for all these other people. I need you to remember that you matter as much as you think other people matter. And with the other, it was kind of the opposite. Her compassion and empathy bone wasn't really built in from the start. And so with her, I would always couch it really positively. I would say, wow, you have really strong ideas and you're confident that they're going to work. But it's important to listen to your friends' ideas because theirs might work too. So the way that we talk to our kids really needs to be child-led by who they are, what they're naturally gifted and skilled at, then bring in the stuff that you know they need to practice and give them an opportunity to do it. But if we just jump to, which historically as parents we're quite good at, why can't you be kinder, right? Why can't you be gentler? Gentle, gentle hands, gentle. It just gets them stuck in this idea of I'm too rough. So here's the general point. They're going to create an identity from your words, whether you want them to or not.
Yeah.
If you formulate the words in such a way that they can identify to what's real and what's true, they're going to be off to a much better start for self-awareness, self-regulation, they're going to do some self-advocacy once they get older. And what that meant for my girls is they were able to walk into a classroom and say, I'm someone who has to sit really close to the front of the room because it's harder for me to process what I'm hearing. So is it okay if I sit here? Every teacher who ever heard my Caroline say that was like, I love this kid. And I'm like, well, me too. But she had to understand what she needed in order to advocate for herself and build that relationship with you.
I mean, obviously an essential life skill and especially important for our kids, like our listeners, they have some special needs. And that's where we are now. And my goal for all my clients is that, you know, you can eat everything in moderation, but there's still just going to be some things that they have to take extra special care so that they can feel their best, so they can feel healthy and happy. And so they are going to have to advocate for themselves, especially as they get older and they're out of the house a little bit more. So I just love what you're saying about just, you know, empowering them to for themselves, to help them with self-awareness. And they can also then, I could see it be more helpful as like they have the words and the power and the authority over themselves to tell us like how they're really feeling. And then that would give us a better sense of how they're reacting to the XYZ food or new anything.
And that's really, and that's number five, right? This self-awareness and the self-regulation and identity matters so much. We all struggle with it, whether we have other challenges given to us or not. But my concern for kids who have labels or diagnoses is that they start to identify by that. And that's just not true. So my daughter, Caroline, has what's called audio processing disorder. Mm-hmm. It's a diagnosis and it's a label. But we were able to find a way over time, because she was diagnosed at 7. So it was a nice long journey of, this is yours. I'm not going to mince words on that. God gave you this. This is yours. But what that means is that you get the ability to learn the strategies, to take ownership of it, and to go out into the world and become that stronger human being because of it. And she has. And not only has she mastered the English language, which was in the very beginning a challenge for her, now she's majoring in Japanese, right? So it's totally possible to have a diagnosis and to have a label and use it as your superpower. And that's what I want for your listeners. I want you to be talking to your kids all day and all night about how your skin is not who you are. It's on the outside of you. Who you are is on the inside of you. We can take care of the outside, right? We can add the ointments and we can use all of your magical creams and oils and all the good stuff. But who you are on the inside, that's yours to develop and learn and treasure. And I'm going to be on that journey with you and I'm going to be cheering for you and teaching you every step of the way.
Yes. So powerful. I love that. And I've heard even with adults, right, that have real diagnoses, like when they say, oh, I have Hashimoto's or whatever it is, you know, mm-hmm. Even your cells change, like your cells make this story so that is true. But if you just rephrase or just like, oh gosh, I just can't lose weight. Or, I mean, anything like that, you know, and then right. I've heard it's just like, so it's so restrictive and your body then does what it can to meet your expectations or to answer the questions that you're asking. And so I think it would help then for our kids, like, wow, your body is really healing and you're doing so well and you're doing all these things, like you ate 4 Brussels sprouts today and you're getting so much rest and so much water. You're really doing everything that you can to heal. And what is the best verbiage that you could use to talk about that? What would you say?
Well, first, I really want these kids to be doing self-check-ins. Like I said, they're all feeling, right? And specifically with skin conditions, it enhances that feeling. So I want them to have a diverse vocabulary to be able to come to you as a parent and report what's going on. And I mean, I know with emotions, we talk about happy, sad, mad, right? We have this real limited emotional vocabulary that we overlay onto our little humans, but they have a very diverse set of actual emotions that they're feeling and processing. So with the health sector, I really want the language to be more than my skin feels good today versus my skin feels bad.
Yeah.
That you can be, and I don't know all the technical terms, but you are the expert there with doing all the research, but like you can be putting that in for your kids. Some days our skin feels smooth. Some days it feels bumpy. Some days it feels itchy. Some days it feels like it's burning. These are all feelings that you can come and express to me. And then when they do that self-check-in and they come and they share with you how they're feeling that day, be incredibly grateful for that. Say, thank you for trusting me with how your body is feeling today. I am going to do my very best to help it feel a little bit better. But the fact that you know how to come tell a trusted adult means that you are healing. You are doing your job of taking your healing into your own hands. And that will be their journey. I mean, now I hope and I pray that a lot of them outgrow it, especially if they get into your programs and your products early on. But if not, it will be theirs to manage mentally and physically for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really helpful. Those type of words are helpful. Like, just thank you for trusting me and sharing that with me and just invite this open dialogue. I really like that a lot. Thank you. Besides these five executive functioning skills, like, what else do you see in terms of like differences in this most recent generation, this COVID generation, versus what we've seen in the past?
Great question. So the reason these skills are so imperative is that they counteract what we're seeing in letting kids have the opportunity to develop the skills. They can't wait. And that's why we're having 0 to 60 meltdowns. They have an input, but something triggers. But instead of the ability to stop and think and wonder and make the plan, they just go boom, all the way to, I don't know how to deal with this feeling, so I am going to have a tantrum. So we are seeing increased lack of emotional regulation. We are seeing a lot of self-soothing through technology, especially in our preschools right now. These kids come and they actually look around and they say, where's the iPad?
Oh,
that's my toy. Where's the? And I know, and we're letting go of any type of guilt that is surrounding this, because when we are in survival mode, which is what we were for a really long time, doing 14 jobs under one roof, that served as a way to have your child being focused on something while you literally had to get something else done. But what happened in their brain is it wired it up to believe that that is how they calm down. And so we need to break that and redefine that wiring in their brain, that self-soothing actually happens in different ways, whether it's internally or using and co-regulating with another human being. We are seeing late milestone developments, late talkers, late walkers, late to potty train, all the things that, you know, typically would be modeled by peers their own age. Because as much as I love a good intentional language statement from an adult, hearing people your own age say that type of information in their own speech patterns really does evolve that skill in our little people. So, you know, we're up against it right now. And I actually think it's an amazing opportunity. I'm a huge believer that with trauma and tragedy comes the opportunity to create something beautiful and new that serves us even better. And so I think there's a great opportunity here to rethink about the way that we educate young kids during their infancy and their preschool years. And so that's where we're at. I will also compassionately stand up for what these teachers are dealing with. And you homeschool, and so you know it, because I'm sure you looked at all the options, that where once there were two or three kids in a class of 15 who struggled with all of these skills, there's now 10 kids out of a class of 15 who struggle with all these skills. So it's changed the dynamic. And so the social emotional skills and the interpersonal dynamic is taking over the classroom and making it so learning is even harder to do. So this is where we have to do our big work.
One, I just want to reflect, like, I just love that message of hope and reframe, because, you know, that's what we do here. It's like, yeah, we're in this boat. We can totally get past it and we will all be better off for it in the end. So I wholeheartedly believe that in all of our biggest challenges, certainly this one with our health. And then, yes, all these learning challenges, 1000%, I have to believe that we'll be better off for it at the end. it would help me and my listeners. So like in the case at school, when there is one person or maybe everyone that's like, yeah, I need help on this spelling word, or like, I can't figure out this problem. And you yell or say, nope, can't do it. Or just, you know, scream for assistance, like right off the bat. What would be something that we could do? And maybe it's not a school setting, but just whatever it is, like, oh my goodness, I need assistance right now. This whole inability to have delayed gratification. What, again, tell us again, what can we do in that moment that would be best?
Absolutely. So the first thing I would do is I always reflect back. So if a kiddo comes to me and they say, put on my boots.
Yeah.
And this is what they do. And this is why we get triggered, because they don't come up to you and say, could you please put on my boots?
No.
They come up to you and say, put on my boots. And you're like, wow, demand much? And so we automatically, so first of all, you need to stay calm and then just reflect back. It looks like you're having trouble putting on your boots. Give them a second chance at the sentence, right? I am doing a one-on-one here. I could do a classroom example, but I think this is more, I think it's going to resonate more with your listeners who are in their homes doing this with their kids. Yeah. It looks like you're having trouble putting on your boots. Yes. Okay. I help kids after I have seen them try to help themselves. And I say this to them, I will help you. Like they came for a yes. So what I always want to give is a yes, but now I'm going to add the conditions of the yes. I will help you after I watch you try to put them on by yourself. Now, this is where you need to know a number of things. You need to know who your kid is. You need to know what their tolerance level is. And that's, you know, somewhat age-based. You need to know what their fine and gross motor skills are. Because if they have trouble with their fine motor digit skills, putting on boots might actually be harder for them than it is for another 2.5-year-old. And you need to know what their state of being is. When did they eat last? When did they sleep last? Are they ready to snap? Or do they have something left in the tank where you can push them a little bit? That's going to tell you how long the try by yourself is. Is it 3 seconds or is it 30 seconds? Mm-hmm. You get to make that decision based on that deep connection, that awareness that you have of the human being in front of you and what you know about them. If they really are just, if they try and you tried, I'll help you now. That's it. There's no judgment. There's no blame. You tried. I'll help you now. I'd be happy to help. Or they try and they actually do it. And this is the thing about delaying that very often shocks the heck out of them. They'll be like, I did it. Like, you did. You did it all by yourself. You just had to try again. And then you celebrate with them.
And what if they feign some sort of effort in putting on their boots? Like, I have a couple of drama queens here, and I could see this happening with my 4-year-old, and she'd be like, oh, there, I tried. Yeah. Like, what would you do then? When it wasn't a real.
If I know that's the type of kiddo I'm dealing with, I'll try to get ahead of it. And this is where the boundary line comes in. And if you're driving the bus, if you're like, okay, we're all going outside now, it's time to do X, Y, Z. What's her name?
Barbara.
Barbara. Oh, nice classic name. I love it. I would say, it's time to go outside because we are doing this, that, and the other. And get just like one down the right. 2-year-old, you need to try to put your boots on all by yourself. If you can't, I'll help you. Barbara, you're putting your boots on by yourself today because we got to get out the door. Like, that's where my boundary line would be set. Very often, if you set the expectation right out of the gate, they'll meet it. Then, you know, if she, did you say 4?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It, 4-year-olds like to do this high level, like courtroom negotiation thing.
Yeah.
They're really good at that. And so if she does like the feigning of the try, you could say, oh, I do see that you tried. I'm still too busy to help right at the moment. Maybe you could ask your brother. And I'm not sure that Barbara wants her brother helping. I think it might be all about you, but you're empowering the independence. And so she might just be like, oh, fine, I'll just do it.
Yeah.
You have so many layers happening all at once.
It's so, that's what makes it so fun. That's what makes the game such a good time is the rules change all the time. And there's all these different temperaments. And yeah, for us, we get to do homeschool and that adds a whole nother layer to practice all of these things all throughout the day. So this has been incredibly helpful. Thank you so much for making the time and for being here. Tell us where my audience can get in touch with you and reach out.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for being such a proactive parent and really kind of supporting each of your kids where they are, even though they're pretty much at home most of the time. It's amazing. So you can all find me through my podcast. It's called Transforming the Toddler Years. And I put out 2 episodes a week and I'm just there serving you and teaching you. And then go ahead and download the transition tips and it'll get you started understanding kind of those thinking steps of what this collaborative parenting methodology is all about.
Perfect. I am doing that right now and putting it on our fridge. So helpful. Thank you, Cara.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Eczema Kids Podcast. We hope you found valuable insights and support for your child's eczema journey. Remember, you're not alone in this, and our community is here to help. Join our Facebook group, Eczema Solutions for Kids, to connect with other parents, share experiences, and discover natural healing strategies. And if you enjoyed today's episode and want to help other parents find comfort and solutions for their kids, please take a moment to leave a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback makes a huge impact and spreads awareness about our mission. Stay tuned for more empowering conversations, expert advice, and stories of triumph over eczema. Together, we can create a supportive network and make a positive difference in the lives of eczema families everywhere. Thank you for being a part of the Eczema Kids podcast community. And until next time, take care and be well.